The audio track you're about to listen to was recorded at LifeStreams Christian Church in South Perth, Western Australia. For more information, please visit our website at www.lifestreamcc.com.
I've been here once before and I've only been to Sydney, but this time I've been in Brisbane, Perth today, and then Melbourne tomorrow. And I've been attacked by all of your wildlife so far. I've been attacked by a snake. And when I say attacked, I mean I was a metre and a half away from what looked like a deadly snake, which was close enough. And then a huge spider that looked like it had been in the Harry Potter movies also visited within a metre and a half of me. But probably the scariest thing that happened to me was I was eating a sandwich and a kookaburra dived bombed me. And, you know, he only got the chips, but he was so close to puncturing my heart. And this morning, I thought, you know, there's no dangerous animals around here, right? So I went for a run down by the Swan River, and I was just chatting to an elderly couple, and said, do you think it's safe to swim in the river? They said, fine. So I'm just about to dive in, and you have a school of jellyfish come by. And I thought, I'm so glad I didn't jump into that. Anyway, I've had a lovely time. I've really appreciated your hospitality. And people like Emily Dickinson and Rod, I don't know if you appreciate just how gracious they are and how welcoming they are. We've really been made to feel very special, and you're lucky to have such wonderful people working with you. I want to share a little bit about my family and then do a little bit of theology with you, and then move into a time of response. And let me introduce you to some of the folks in my little family. Oh, come on, you're gonna work for me? Yes. So this is a snapshot of my family. So yeah, that's me, that's my wife, Miriam. These are my two eldest boys, Joel and Luke, and that's Anna. And they are our kind of biological kids, and we love them to bits, but we'd always talked about possibly fostering or adopting. And it came to a point in our family where we realized we couldn't have any more kids. We were kind of had some kind of medical issues, and we thought, you know what, those were good intentions that we'd had in the past. Let's act on them. Let's do something about it. And so this little girl, she came into our lives. She was our foster child. She came straight from the hospital to our home, and she just turned our world upside down. We said goodbye to her when she was about 9 months old. She went back to live with Mum, but Mum had a lot of challenges in her life and wasn't able to care for her. And so social services asked if we would adopt her, and we just said yes. And she became a wonderful part of our family. I remember going to court, and we were all dressed up. I'd worn my best suit, and all my kids were with us, and we were really nervous because we thought maybe something will go wrong at the last minute and we won't be able to adopt. But the judge had our kids sit on his lap. He allowed them to play with the hammer that he had. And he just said, this is my favorite part of my job. Normally, I'm sending people down to terrible things. But now I get to kind of create a little family for this little girl. And so we have precious memories of that day. But we didn't think that our job was done, because there are so many vulnerable children in our communities. And sadly, that isn't just in the UK. You here in Perth, you have a huge number of kids in foster care. In Western Australia, about 4,000 children are in foster care. And your state is looking for more foster carers to come forward. But sadly, it's become unusual for Christians to be involved in this. It's unusual to find churches that are kind of championing it to take place. And I want to kind of get into that a little bit. Let me introduce you to these guys. I can't tell you their names for security reasons. But this little lad, he'd had a horrific start in life. His mum had been violently attacked by his father in front of him, and he was arrested. The dad and then mum and son went into a women's refuge, and while mum was having facial reconstructive surgery after the attack, this little boy came to live with us. And he is an amazing singer. In fact, he does a good Maroon 5, if you're familiar with that. Moves Like Jagger is his song. And he can do it anywhere, you know, just drop of a hat, he'll get into that. But let me tell you about this little boy. He came into our care. He'd had 8 families already by the time that he was 3, so he's pretty messed up. And we were told very clearly that he was a British lad. His dad had immigration status. That was all fine. He was going to come and live with us for a little while. We'd already booked a family holiday. I was speaking at a conference in France. And so we said, okay, that's fine. We'll just get his dad to sign that he can come and it'll be fine. Turned out his dad had lied about his immigration status. This little boy, he was Nigerian. And so we thought, okay, how hard can it be to get a Nigerian passport? It's crazy hard to get a Nigerian passport. I had to get to the Nigerian embassy at 6 o'clock in the morning, which is in the centre of London, about an hour and a half where I live. And even though I was there at six, there were still five people ahead of me in the queue. And I tell you, you could make an amazing comedy about being in the queue at the Nigerian embassy. The guy ahead of me, he was a white guy, but he was madly in love with a person that he'd met on the internet from Nigeria. And he'd never met them, never spoken to them on the phone. He had a picture of this gorgeous model who was the girl that he was going to meet. And then the lady in front of him was saying, you need to know this is a scam. There's no woman there. And he's going, no, there is. She loves me. Look, I have an email. And, oh, man, it was like falling apart in front of us. And oh, it was terrible. And the guy in front of him said, don't worry, man, just go and risk it. And she said, what are you doing? He says, oh, you know, I'm going to Nigeria. I'm going to spend time with my family. She says, why aren't you wearing a wedding ring? And he says, oh, well, we Nigerian men, we don't wear wedding rings. Why don't you wear wedding rings? And she had a big argument with him saying, well, you should wear them. You're just going to fool around. And then by this time, there were about 100 people in the queue. And the lady in front of me, who's just told the guy that he isn't really getting married to a lady in Nigeria, said, all right, you men here, how many of you have a wedding ring? And we're doing kind of polling of all the guys. It was crazy, crazy, crazy. Anyway, after hours in the queue and like going from one department to another, after 24 hours, I had a passport. I had a Nigerian brand new passport. I thought, brilliant, game on, we're okay now. But apparently the French don't like the Nigerians. So I had a passport, but I still can't get him in the country. So I go to the French embassy. And it turns out the French embassy doesn't have a door. How do you get into an embassy if there's no door? Well, I just started looking at all the security cameras and I got my camera out and started taking pictures. Pretty soon there's this huge guy, you know, massive guy, and he's got like one of those earpieces and sunglasses, even though it's winter. And he says, what are you doing? I said, oh, look, I've got a child, foster child. He hasn't got a passport. Can you help me? Oh, yeah, sure, sure. Here's the entrance around the back. We'll get you an appointment sorted. Anyway, the long story, we managed to get him all the papers that he needed. But you think, for me, as I'm getting involved in this little boy's life, immigration, I know that's a hot topic here, isn't it? Immigration is not just a big political debate. Immigration became a personal thing for me. Because this little boy, he needed to be with a family. He needed security. Just because he's in foster care doesn't mean he shouldn't get a family holiday. Just because he's Nigerian doesn't mean he can't belong to our family and be loved by us. And so suddenly those big political issues become personal issues. And this isn't just about how much tax I pay or whether I like my neighbours or not. This is about the needs of the broken and the vulnerable. Are you with me? So what we've experienced, and you know, I tell you our story, but you know, thousands of Christian families across the UK have started to open their homes and open their hearts to vulnerable people, that they might receive the love that they need in their lives after having a pretty tough start. And so as I travel around, even here in Australia, I'm meeting people that are passionate about changing the way the church engages with these vulnerable kids. And there's a really good reason why you should. If you've got a Bible, you might want to turn it on now. And Galatians chapter 4 is where you need to go. And if you've got really good eyesight or don't have a phone with a Bible on, have a look at this little text here. Galatians chapter 4. This is the Apostle Paul writing to a church in kind of modern day Turkey back then called Galatia. And this is a church that's struggling with its identity. You know, how Jewish do you have to be in order to be a Christian? Do you have to undergo all the kind of Jewish legal rituals in order to be acceptable to the kingdom of God? And Paul is explaining, actually, that there are some challenges about being Jewish. It doesn't mean you're automatically part of the family of God. There still needs to be more that happens to you. And so he begins to explain it here. Let me read it to you. What I'm saying is that as long as an heir is underage, he is no different from a slave. Although he owns the whole estate, the heir is subject to guardians and trustees until the time set by his father. So also, when we were underage, we were in slavery under the elemental spiritual forces of the world. Pause there for a minute. What's Paul saying? He said, Jewish people are like children who have an amazing inheritance, but they haven't received it yet. They've got amazing riches, but it's not theirs yet. Because Christ hasn't come, they haven't put their belief in him, and so they need that in order to become fully heirs of the blessings of God. And actually what's happened to them is the law, a good gift from God, has actually become used by elemental spiritual forces to oppress them. Because people will think they have to earn their righteousness in front of God. And the more you try to do that, the more small you feel. Because every time you see yourself in the mirror of the law, you realize that, like all of us, we've all failed. So Paul says of the Jewish nation, and I think you can extend it to all of us too, that because of the law, because of our inability to live according to God's standards, we are like vulnerable children held captive by elemental spiritual forces. Now, if the story ended there, that would be pretty desperate for everybody, wouldn't it? No one, Jew or Gentile, Australian or Brit, none of us would have access to God. We'd be far from him because of sin in our lives. Now, the next part of the passage, if you move me on, it's a great text, actually. It's a Christmas text. Look how it goes. But when the time set had fully come, God sent his son, born of a woman, born under the law, to redeem those under the law, that we might receive adoption to sonship. Because you are his sons, God sent the spirit of his son into our hearts, the spirit who calls out, Abba, Father. So you are no longer slaves, but God's children. And since you are his children, he made you also heirs. Just pause there for a minute. Once we were vulnerable children, cut off from God, but God, at just the right time, sent his son Jesus for us. And you probably know the word send is the word that we get in Latin, the word missio. And it's the word where we get the word mission from. So God sent his son on a mission into our world. When I hear the word mission, I think of a highbrow television documentary I watched from Channel 5, which you, Australia, gave to us. It's a Rupert Murdoch channel, and we're not particularly grateful for it, so thanks for that one. But here's what happens. It was a great show. It was called World's Most Scariest Rescues 2. Have you seen it? It's a classic. And there's an amazing picture of a huge container ship in the ocean. But even though this ship is huge, it's like the one on Captain Phillips, you know, piled high with containers. But it's been caught in a massive storm. And the waves and the wind are buffeting this ship, so it just looks like a tiny little vessel. And suddenly off the vessel comes what looks like an ant. But it's a man. He's been blown and washed overboard in the sea. And now he's just this tiny speck next to this huge ship, surrounded by huge waves. And at that moment, I'm empathizing with the man in the sea. I'm wondering how he's feeling. Has anyone even noticed that I've gone? How long have I got to survive? Am I going to be smashed into the ship, or am I going to be drowned in the sea? Who is possibly going to put themselves in danger that I could have life and a hope? And then you see it, a speck in the top right-hand corner of the screen, and it's a helicopter. And out of the helicopter comes what looks like a spider's thread, and pretty soon there's a diver diving out of the helicopter into the ocean, engulfing this man, and then being winched to safety. And at that moment, I begin to empathize with the helicopter pilot. And imagine her asleep in her bed just an hour before. Suddenly the phone rings, and I don't know, I imagine it's a bat phone, you know, it's glowing red in the dark, so she knows it's from the base. And she picks it up, and, I'm asleep. Yeah, but there's a ship in trouble. Yeah, but it's the middle of the night. Yeah, but there's a man overboard. Suddenly she's awake. And she's up, and she's dressed. And I like to imagine a pole that takes her from her bedroom straight into the car and driving down to the base. And she says, well, why am I doing this? I could have been ferrying supermodels from one catwalk to another. I could have been taking Jenson Button or Lewis Hamilton to the next Formula One Grand Prix. But I'm just not any old helicopter pilot. I'm a rescue helicopter pilot. This is what we do. And so she heads off into the storm. And I imagine in that rescue mission, you have something of the Trinity at work. You see, at just the right time, God sent his son, born of a woman, born under the law. God in the glory of heaven was completely at peace, tucked up, all cozy. And yet, he saw our need. And driven by compassion, God sends his son into our world to rescue us, to save us, to forgive us, to justify us, to redeem us. All those wonderful words. But that isn't what this passage says. God didn't just send his son to rescue us, to redeem us, to justify us, to forgive us. God sent his son that we could be adopted. Here's a quick question. Can I ask you to do it with your neighbor just for 60 seconds? We talk a lot in church, we sing a lot in church about forgiveness, about rescue, about redemption. But we don't talk much about adoption. Very rarely do we talk about our own adoption into God's family. But as a result, you lose something. So here's the question. I told you have to do a little bit of theology. Here it is. What does adoption give you in your relationship with God that forgiveness, redemption, justification, whatever other metaphor you want to use, doesn't give you? Do you understand? What do you get because of adoption that you don't get from these other metaphors that we sing about and talk about a lot? Have a little chat with your neighbour. See if you can come up with two or three if you're feeling particularly good this morning. And we'll talk again in a moment. Okay, how are you doing? I'm going to start here, but I'm going to come to you, so be ready, okay? Anyone here, who's going to be first? Get in there quick, because the easy answers are always good to get out first. What does adoption give you that these other normal ways we use of talking about a relationship doesn't give you? Yes. Identity, that's right. So, because I am adopted, I am now God's son or daughter. And that's an identity that can never change whatever else happens in my life. You know, if you've been rescued, I was rescued by my mum once. I was drowning in the sea, and it was an amazing beach in Malaysia, full of beautiful people, and my mum rescued me. That was really embarrassing, because I was like 15 and trying to look cool. But I've got into trouble again since, haven't I? So my rescued status actually doesn't stay. But with adoption, I'm always going to be a son of the living God. That's an incredible identity, isn't it? Great. How about you guys? What does adoption give you that these other metaphors don't give you in your relationship with God? An inheritance. That's great. Look, let me tell you, in my house, when we were first married, my wife and I, pizza night was a great night. Because we'd buy one big pizza, but my wife had a very small appetite. So she would have this acute angle of a pizza, and I would get the reflex angle around the rest of it. Good times. But now, there's so many kids, my slice of the pizza is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. Now imagine if Jesus had felt like that. He felt, well, you know, I am the Son of God. If I adopt all these brothers and sisters, they have, weirdly, a sharing the inheritance with me. They become co-heirs with me of this inheritance. I want it all to myself. I'm not going to welcome them. That isn't what Jesus, who's the best big brother in the world, did for us. He was the one that jumped out of the helicopter. He came out of heaven into our world, died a horrific death, so that he could welcome us into the family and share the inheritance with us. What an amazing brother we get as a result of our adoption. How about you guys? Anything else you want to give me? What does adoption give you? That security. Good. You see, let's take an example. Let's take rescue. Okay? So the helicopter pilot comes, she rescues you from the sea, drops you off at the helipad to the hospital. Job done now, isn't it? She can leave and game over. But with adoption, God says, no, you know, this is not just a rescue operation. You now belong to me forever. I'm never letting you go. So there is incredible security. In the ancient world, particularly the Roman world, adoption was irreversible. You could never be unadopted. That wasn't possible legally. God says, you are mine forever. That's an incredible security. Good, okay, last chance, you guys. Yes, well said. See, look, let's think about forgiveness. Okay, before this morning, most of you never met me before. So relationally, we're at zero. Isn't that right? We have zero relationship. Now imagine I might have offended you this morning. That's possible. I'm pretty good at offending people. And, you know, so now we're at minus 10 relationally. But then you're really nice people and you forgive me. You know what? We're back at zero again, aren't we? Does that make sense? When God wipes away our sin, wipes the slate clean, God's got nothing against us. But that isn't what becoming a Christian means, is it? Becoming a Christian means God wants to be your father forever. He wants intimacy with you. Not just a status, not you're rescued, you're forgiven. He says you're mine and I'm never letting you go. Every time you pray the Lord's Prayer or say the Apostles' Creed, you are affirming your adoption. You and I have no right to call God our Father except through adoption. Does that make sense? Now hear this, brothers and sisters. If we have been adopted by our God, if we were adopted not because we were good, not because we measured up, not because God was lonely and he fancied a few more kids in his life, we believe in a God who is self-sufficient. He didn't need us. And yet, because we were in need, God reached out and adopted us. In the UK, we have a problem. Most of the people that step forward for adoption are doing so because of infertility. And it's a completely fair enough reason to want to adopt a child. I get that. And yet, there's a huge queue for babies. Meanwhile, the older children... Older means over 3 years old, a little bit like that boy I showed you. They're left in the system, nobody wants them. And so they just stay in care. And sadly, when they age out of care, normally at 18, the church meets them again. When we do work with the homeless, when we do work in prisons, when we do drug rehabilitation. And it's great that we get involved then. But wouldn't it have been even better when they were three? We gave them the families that they need, shaped the course of their lives. The problem seems to be people really want a baby. I really want a young child. No problems, no defects, no emotional baggage, no physical problems. You know, I've got my shopping list, and if they don't measure up, I don't really want them. Thank God that he didn't have the same approach when he adopted us. None of us would get adopted then, would we? God saw our need. He saw our brokenness. He saw our sin. He saw the mess that we'd got ourselves into and the mess we'd got other people into. And he says, I want you forever in my family. I'm going to love the hell out of you. We're calling the church, brothers and sisters. There are thousands of kids in your care system. Most of them don't know the love of a permanent family. Why not us? To which other group of people did God give the command, the description of the kind of worship that he accepts? Do you know it? James 1. True religion that God our Father accepts as pure and blameless. Do you know what it is? You know what? You've got a great worship band, but that's not on the list. You've got an amazing pastor with great communication skills. That's not on the list. You've got a wonderful building. That's not on the list. True religion that God our Father accepts as pure and blameless is to care for widows and orphans in their distress. If there are orphans in distress in our city, whose responsibility is that? Social services? The Child Protection Division? Brothers and sisters, God said that's us, his people. We can't leave it to anyone else. In the UK, the church is being outstripped by non-Christian people. They're more willing than Christians to step forward. There's something wrong there. We're the adopted people of God. We need to do something to demonstrate that same adopting love, that same caring love to the kids that are in our schools, that are down our streets, that are in the families, in our communities. I want to show you just I don't think we've got time. I'll tell you what we'll do. Let me lead us in a prayer, if you'd permit me. And if you're able to stand, I'd ask you to stand with me, and we'll just pray together. I don't know you here, and so there may be, even this morning, people that don't know God is their Father. They don't know that they've been adopted. They don't know that there's a loving Father welcoming them into his family. And I just want to give opportunity to be able to make that possible this morning, that even here, in this room, an adoption can take place, that you, whatever you've done, wherever you've come from, whatever your background, whatever you're ashamed of, God says, I know you and I want you. My son was willing to die that you could become family. Family with these brothers and sisters in the room here, but also family with God, that you can call him your Father. Let me pray to give you the chance if you want to make that kind of commitment. Father God, I just want to thank you that although I was like drowning in the sea, that there was no hope for me. I'd got myself in all sorts of trouble. And yet, God, because of your great love, you sent your Son into the world that he would forgive me, that he would rescue me, that he would wipe my slate clean, that he would give me a hope. But more than that, that my God, that you would adopt me into your family. Lord, if there's anyone here that needs to know that you are the loving God, you're the best Father we could ever dream of or hope of, and you want us, even though you know us, Lord, I pray that we would have a new member of the family this morning as they accept that adoption from you. But Father, for the rest of us, those of us that know you already, Lord, we just want to thank you that you've poured your grace into our lives. You've accepted us as we are. But Lord, would you soften our hearts? Would you let us look and see if there's room in our hearts and room in our homes for these kids that don't yet know you? These kids that have seen things and experienced things that no one should have to go through. Lord, would you make your church a model of your adopting love? That we might be the families that these kids need. Would it be known throughout the nation that the church is willing to love those that are seen unlovable by the rest of the nation? Break our hearts, Lord, that we would love those that are so valuable to you. Just as we sing now, we're going to confess again that we believe in God the Father. And if that's true, you believe in God the Father, the great Father that longs for all the nations to come to him. Longs for people young or old, longs for the rich and the poor, longs that these vulnerable children would receive the love that they need. As we confess this great truth, would we be willing to offer God the true worship that he longs for? God bless you.